My next guest is on the line. He is Jake Wallace Simons. He's a columnist, a broadcaster, and a foreign correspondent. He wrote an article which was published in the Jewish Chronicle. The title of the article is "From Medieval Blood Libels to Israeli Baby Killers: How Anti-Semitism Endures in Britain," and that is the discussion that we are going to have right now. Jake, thank you so much for being with me on Chai FM.
Hello.
Jake, your piece opens with nothing less than like a punch to the gut. You talk about attempted arson, you talk about drone attacks, you talk about knife threats and vandalism. And I guess I want to ask you from your vantage point, what has shifted in the UK that makes this level of open anti-Semitism feel almost normalized?
Well, this is something which Britain has not really suffered for many, many generations. I think you really have to think all the way back to the 13th century with the expulsion of the Jews to find this level of anti-Semitism. I don't think that's an exaggeration. What we're seeing now, of course, began on October the 7th, or actually on October the 8th. That was when we first saw demonstrations against Israel, or perhaps for Hamas, on the streets of London, before the blood was even dry in southern Israel. And it's just got worse and worse the more Israel has acted to defend itself against the jihadis, the more jihadi activity and jihadi sympathetic activity we've seen. And it seems to be burgeoning regardless of the fact that we've had a ceasefire in Israel and Gaza for some months now. That doesn't seem to have abated the venom which has been unleashed on Jewish communities here. I mean, the security is understandably very, very tight at the moment because we've had so many arson attacks, acts of vandalism, even two murders in Manchester a few months ago.
I remember it well. Remember it very, very well indeed. Just interesting to me that you went all the way back to the 13th century and you didn't stop at Oswald Mosley and the brown shirts. Do you think that that wasn't as bad as perhaps we were led to believe it was? Or I'm just interested.
No, the black shirts, not the brown shirts.
Yes.
Yeah, you're probably right. I mean, that was pretty bad. Maybe I was exaggerating slightly, but I think I was really thinking in those historical terms. Because
and the blood libel, yeah, we'll get there because I do want to link it up because you know we forget that the UK for all its the way we in the colonies tend to view it, you know, as the center of justice and a fair go and all that is good and right in the world, it actually hasn't always been that way, certainly not from a Jewish perspective at all. I just want to stay on your article for a little. You referenced the Shomrim video. I actually happen to have seen that on my feed. Just for the South African audience, Shomrim would be the equivalent of our community safety organization. So you highlighted a moment in that Shomrim video where the man on the bike was shouting at the Jewish guy, "You killing babies in Palestine." There we have it yet again. It's the same accusation that, as you say, you can draw a straight line from Norwich 1144 to Britain 2026.
That's right. I mean, it always has been the case ever since 1144, when the first example of the blood libel occurred. It's always been the case that anti-Semites seem to develop a particular concern for the deaths and suffering of children when it comes to the Jews. It doesn't seem to worry them when there are other wars, but as soon as children are tragically fatalities or wounded in this war, that's what gets all the attention. And the idea that Jews, or you know, Israelis as a euphemism, are quote-unquote baby killers has become ubiquitous now. And I think that is testament to the success of the propaganda of Hamas, of the Islamic Republic of Iran, and their allies in Russia and China, their huge social media bot farms that they have, the propaganda efforts which are amplified and bolstered by the United Nations, by the mainstream media. I mean, all of this stuff really coalesces into that one phrase, baby killers, that is pinned on Israel just as it was pinned on the Jews back in 1144. And the greatest irony, which I bring out in the column is that the back in 1144, the person who first came up with this idea of accusing Jews of murdering Gentile children for their
Condit.
rituals was himself Theobald of Cambridge, who was a Jew who'd
Oh,
converted to
that's
Christianity, and he said that, you know, when I was Jewish, I saw that we did this, and now I'm exposing it to the world. So, in a way, the blood libel itself was an act of Jewish genius, which was then
Oh
picked
my
up by
goodness.
Gentiles all over the world, and the results we see to this day. And I think that the reason I bring that up is that I think that we see many, many echoes of that today, with lots of Jews, particularly on the hard left, being more anti-Semitic than the anti-Semites.
And I guess you probably are referring to Zach Polanski. I'm guessing that's where you're going with that. The leader of the British
Well,
Greens.
certainly in the yeah, I mean, in the excuse me, in the column, I was making the point about Zach Polanski. I mean, he is the only Jewish leader of a political party in Britain at the moment, and the Greens are the most radical party in British politics today on the left. It's if you imagine the Jeremy Corbyn part of the Labour Party without the moderate wing, and that's kind of what the Greens are now. They've made an unholy alliance with the with Islamists in various pockets of immigration communities in our country. It's a green-green alliance. It's no longer even a red-green alliance. It's a green-green alliance now, and shamefully headed up by this Jewish man.
The parallels are
And he has.
frightening. They're frightening what you're telling me here. He's quoted as saying Israel kills a child every 45 minutes. That's what he's quoted as saying. So, I mean, straight back to Theobald of Cambridge, the baby killer trope, there it is.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, and you know, the thing is that the anti-Semites love it. You know, there aren't many Jews who stand with Zach Polanski against his own people, but the few that there are at every single rally are always thrust right into the vanguard, right into the front, because they just make everyone else sigh and convince themselves that they're not the anti-Semites that they're accused of being, because there are Jews protecting them in the front. You know, these are people who are willfully being used by the worst people on the planet as a fig leaf for the oldest hatred. It's shameful. I mean, it's just shameful.
What do you think it is about that child killer accusation that lands harder than any other anti-Semitic trope?
Well, I think it really is the history. It's a very, very old trope indeed. It was popularized, if that's the right term, by Christians. It was then picked up by Muslims, initially by Arab Christians in the Ottoman Empire, and it then was transferred to Muslims. So it's a slur with a very, very long pedigree that's deeply embedded in our collective unconscious, both in the West and also in the Middle East. And of course, it has the capacity to pull on the heartstrings like nothing else. I mean, if ever there was an innocent person, that person would be a child. You know, children are the picture of innocence. And really, the propaganda relies not on facts, but on pulling those heartstrings, on manipulating our emotions, on triggering an emotional response. I mean, it's no use saying, look, we tried to protect as many children as we could. Children always die in war, and it's a tragic consequence, and that's just how things are. You sound incredibly hard-hearted when you're comparing what you're saying to the picture of a suffering baby, because and that's what they play on. That's the art of the propagandist, is to activate people's emotional centers of the brain rather than their rational ones, so the rational part is overridden. And that's why you see so many hordes of people in the streets with so much passion, so much emotion, so much venom, because they've been subjected to endless images of suffering children. And that keys back into that deep water table of anti-Semitism, as we've seen from the 12th century to the present, both in the West and in the Middle East. And on top of that, it's amplified by social media and gets to the core of your human sympathies. So I think it's that toxic combination that really is used to such a great effect by our enemies to turn the world increasingly against us.
Jake, final question for you. You end the article with a very haunting line. You say, "Have we been living a lie the whole time?" What were you referring to?
Well, I mean, I think I'm probably not alone in saying that the speed and the extent with which the backlash, if it can be called a backlash, it's not, it wasn't even a backlash. It was an expression of support. There's nothing to nothing to backlash against. Israel hadn't responded to October the 7th before the protests began. So it was a celebration. It was a jubilation. It was a carnival of celebration of October the 7th. And the way in which it just ripped through society, ripped through social media, ripped through the mainstream media, ripped through the universities, ripped through the youth. I mean, now Israel's popularity is polling lower than I believe it ever has before in many parts of the world. And just the momentum, which was so quick and so powerful, so says to me that in the years leading up to October the 7th, we weren't as safe as we thought. Israel certainly wasn't as safe as it thought, because those forces were building up and just waiting to until the defenses gave way to crash in upon the country. And similarly, I think in the diaspora, we weren't as safe as we thought. These people were there all the time. They were creating the funding networks, creating the protest networks, creating the propaganda networks, slowly advancing with their agenda in all different areas of society, only waiting for this opportunity to push the button on all the networks which had so painstakingly over generations been put in place. So it feels to me, looking back, a sense of great poignancy. We were so, you know, in that pre-October the 7th world, before the world changed forever, we thought we were happy, but actually we were just in a state of gross naivety. And that's the most sobering fact, I think, of all.
One hell of a wake-up call, your article, Jake Wallace-Simons. Thank you so much for being with me on Chai FM this afternoon.